Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner. It is Wednesday, February 5th, 2014, just before 3:30 UTC. I'm Sam Minter. Yvonne Bo is here again. Hello, Yvonne.
Yo, yo, yo.
We have got an exciting show planned for
exciting,
you.
Exciting. It's amazing. It's an amazing show. No, it's not amazing.
Hey, before we start, I just wanted to say one thing. Since our last show, it was Yvonne's birthday, so happy birthday, Yvonne.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You are now ancient and decrepit?
Yeah, I'm 43. What do you want me to do?
There you go.
I am. It is what it is.
Yeah, from looking at you, I thought you were at least 50, but okay.
That's what a few people said. Well, you know, here's the thing. I got somebody, a friend of mine, gave me some very old scotch, and I noticed that it was bottled. It said, bottled from scotch, distilled on or before 1994. I'm like, fuck, really? Jesus Christ. 94. I mean, we were in college.
They should have at least gotten you a bottle that was bottled the year you were born.
Well, that would have been quite more expensive. This was expensive enough, I'm going to say. This was, like, overboard. I actually, when they told me that they were, oh, no, I'm going to get you one of those, I was like, dude, are you fucking kidding me? That's a little bit overboard. And I'm like, no, I'm going to get you one of those. And, but realizing that, yeah, I mean, it's shit. I mean, this bottle, the 20 years, well, let's face it, when we were that age, I mean, we were three, right? 20 years before, I mean, we were three, 4 years old. Now, 20 years ago, I was in college? Fuck. Yeah, it's been 20 years since we graduated from college, Sam.
Yeah, well, I mean,
it's,
they're kids old enough to drink that were born at that time.
Fuck.
Wow. Yes. Anyway, we do have a real show planned. We're going to talk about Google and their having fun with Motorola. We're going to talk about Microsoft. Some changes going on there. And then we'll shift gears a little bit. The debt limit is in the news again. And finally, I tweeted one article in the last few days before I recorded this with someone advocating a variant of something that I've advocated off and on for years now, which is choosing politicians by lottery instead of by election. And so we'll talk a little bit about that.
Good Lord. Yeah, okay.
Okay, so shall we jump right in?
Sure. Let's go, Joe.
So, one of the recurring themes that it seems like at least every other year for the every other week for the last however long it's been, you've been bitching about Google buying Motorola and how bad that was and how much money they spent on it and how it was losing them money.
Because it's ridiculous, right?
So what happened this week, Yvonne?
Google announces that the loss at Motorola expanded like 150% from the previous year, and then they announced at the same time that they sold it. That they got rid of the fucking thing.
To Lenovo.
Got
rid of most of it. They're keeping a few bits and pieces.
All they're keeping are the patents, as far as I understand. Okay,
There was one other group they were keeping inside it, but I forget what it was.
Now, the one thing is that even the deal, the headline was 2.9 million. Well, billion. It was only 2.9 billion. Yeah, it really should have been. I'm shocked they paid that much. I gotta be honest with you. Let's face it, this thing has been losing, what, last quarter they lost 400 million in a quarter? Okay, all right, so I mean, so you're taking an anvil around your neck, I mean, basically, with this fucking thing. So, they sold her for that, and the thing is that only $600 million of the deal was in cash, alright? They gave them, like, a promissory note, stock, a whole bunch of shit. I mean, it was, like, really, you know, I mean, dude, this was just, like, a deal. They were just, they realized, we need to get rid of this fucking thing. right? Which is what I've been saying for 2 years. I mean, this thing is just...
Here's the thing. We're getting rid of it now. But is there a case to be made that Google could have done something interesting with Motorola, but they just sat on it and did jack shit instead?
No, I don't think there was. I mean, I really don't.
Could they have gone all in and said, okay, we're going to make our own phones? I mean, they would have pissed off all their partners, but they did little drips and drabs, and Motorola was still operating independently, and yeah, they did the Moto X, but they never went all in and said, this is really what we're doing. We're going to own it from start to finish. We're going to make what we want.
They've been building those Nexus devices, right?
Yeah.
Okay. It's true that they're contracting manufacturing to LG or whoever. I think it is LG.
It's been different times.
Different times or whatever. But they're outsourcing the manufacturing. They went all in with Motorola. None of that shit has worked. All right. They've lost money on all the devices they have made. They have lost tons of money. All right.
Now, of course, if you look at what they've said pretty consistently, although everybody's always been like, haha, we don't believe that, including now, they've always said, we're really buying this for the patents.
But the patents are worthless. It was 2 years ago, right? Kodak went into bankruptcy, and their whole bankruptcy plan was predicated, oh, we're going to get $4 or $5 billion for the patents. In the end, they got $500 million. The other part was that Motorola had been litigating against a whole bunch of people with the patents they had. They won none of the cases. So the patents, honestly, are worthless. All right. They said that that's what they did it. The patents have proven to be worthless. If they would have bought it, listen, if they would have let Motorola go to bankruptcy, which eventually it would have gone, they would have gotten the patents on the cheap, which is like what happened with the Kodak patents, Kodak had been shopping the patents nonstop on and on, and nobody bit. Nobody bit. They kept asking at least $3 billion. Nobody bit. They finally went into the auction in bankruptcy court. The price came out $500 million. So basically, you could have let them do the same thing. You could have picked up the patents for no money. So Google paid $8 billion, basically, at the end. I think the calculation, I'll be generous, $6 to $7 billion. Actually, you got to add that this deal is not going to close probably for about 3 to 6 months. So $7 billion in total for patents that are basically close to worthless? Wow, what a deal. I mean,
Is there any sort of... Because this is one of the things they're keeping at the end of the day. Is there anything at all worth jack in there? Is there some patent?
No! It was just a massive misadventure. It was just a massive, massive mistake. It's that, like I said from the beginning, it was just stupid. It was... I mean, they pissed off their partners. They blew billions of dollars into it. And, you know, they've got, honestly, barely anything in return for it. It was just, you know, idiotic from the beginning. So,
even though publicly they don't say so, do you think internally they fully realize that?
I think they do. I think they do. And I think you and I traded emails with somebody a little bit that I think that Google employees despised the whole Motorola, all right, is what I can tell, all right, and which is the reason why they just unloaded it that quickly. It was a sore point. I think people hated it. It was just, I mean, every time they reported financials, it was this freaking massive anvil. Oh yeah, this went up and whatever. Oh yeah, we lost another couple of $100 million on Motorola. I'm like, really, really, you know. It's like, what the fuck? I mean, I remember last summer when I was making fun of their announcement, we're going to spend $500 million marketing these phones. Well, apparently they may have done that because, let's see, revenue for Motorola dropped 33%, okay, all right, despite the two new models, and their operating loss widened to about $400 million from $150 million.
Mm-hmm.
So they may well have spent all that fucking money in marketing, but they sure as hell got nobody to buy this shit.
Hey, but
your sales collapsed.
But didn't the Moto X? Couldn't you get it with like a wooden back or something?
Yes, apparently so. I did see that. Yes.
Doesn't that make the difference?
Apparently not. No, they were average phones. They were not None of, I mean, the X and the G, they were average phones. I mean, I don't understand what the hell the whole strategy was. These were not, like, great over-the-top phones. They were average phones. Average screens, average camera. There was nothing outstanding.
This wasn't, like, the flagship best Android out there.
No, neither of them were. So what the hell were they doing with this damn thing? I would have thought, you talked about the strategy. Well, they bought them because they wanted to make the most awesome flagship Android phone. I don't know, maybe make the whole phone from, like, I don't know, what the hell, carbon fiber and, like, I don't know, the crystal that the Apple uses now on everything, sapphire crystal, and it's got the biggest battery life, and it's, like, the smallest, and the thinnest, and the best, and you know what? The screen was mediocre. It wasn't even a high density one. It didn't have, the camera was sucked. I mean, it's like all the stuff you looked at it. I mean, it was an average camera. It was an average thing. It was an average battery life. And you're like, well, why the fuck am I buying this fucking thing?
Yeah, but I am at the website right now in the little maker thing, and you know, I can pick the wood back. I can pick the color for the front. I can separately pick the accent color, so I'm getting ebony wood with a white front and a blue accent.
Wow!
And I can add a personalized message to the back and add a clear case on top of the whole thing.
Well, except the message saying "Go fuck yourself" on the back of the phone. Wouldn't that be a nice gift to like send to Larry Page? Here you go. Have a phone on me. Here it says "Go fuck yourself" on the back. Wonderful.
So, and that's another question. So they admitted this is a huge fuck-up. Anybody getting fired?
No! You know what? As a matter of fact, they kept talking about how it was just, oh, this was our brilliant strategic move! We got Motorola! We snatched it from out there! We sold it, and we got these patents! And I'm like, really? And then there's all these morons out there, like, saying, oh, Google won out of this. Won what? What? If they would have taken those resources and think about this, right? $6 billion they plowed into this. How about they plowed that money into buying some patents out there, just buying the patents and like investing more money in developing those Nexus devices they've been doing. They spend $3 fucking billion on them. Jesus, did you think they could have gotten a lot better return than just blowing it into this crap? I think so.
So now one of the things I've heard people talking about this week is, of course, we talked the other week and you made extensive fun of the fact that Google also bought Nest a couple weeks ago.
Yes!
And what I've heard people talking this week is that, hey, they're not buying Nest because they want to make thermostats. They're buying Nest because they wanted the team at Nest as the core of a new device industrial design group that's going to build all kinds of things.
That may well be.
Potentially including phones. And basically what they're doing is they're going to do with the team they pulled over from Nest what they wanted to do with Motorola last time.
I kind of get that, and that may well be, but paying $3 billion for it is massively overpaying for it. That company couldn't have been generating more than a couple of $100 million in revenue.
Well, again, it sounds like they wanted what's his name, the guy in charge of it, the former Apple guy who founded Nest.
So wait a minute. So Google, everybody kept talking about how
some of his
was innovating by storm, how it was innovating everybody, out innovating. Wait a minute. They needed to pay $3 billion for the old guy that invented the iPod because. In order to get innovation? I mean, seriously? Are they that desperate to get innovation?
Well, so the alternative that everybody was talking about, of course, was that, you know, this is all just a ploy to get more people on Google+. Because if you don't sign up for Google+, they'll keep lowering the temperature in your house.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Well, I got a couple of fucking Nest thermostats in my house. Don't tell me that shit. I find it hard to believe that that's
that was of course a joke. that they were.
No. But I find it hard to believe that it's part of a ploy of like getting more people onto any other platforms. Okay, I know, right. It was a joke specifically, but I mean, like to get into the other platforms. That's one hell of an expensive way to do it. Let's face it, Nest's a niche product. Okay, all right, it's a nice product. Like I said, I love the product, but.
Well, the whole thing, the idea didn't make sense until I heard people talking about it's not about the product, it's about getting the team that made the product so they can make other things.
I get that, but that at the same time,
$3 billion. Yeah, I know.
My point about it is, it's not that some of these ideas are bad. It's just that you can't keep overpaying for shit all the time. All right, because eventually it catches up with you. All right.
Although some people have used this strategy successfully, it's a tough strategy to sort of buy your innovation from outside rather than building a culture where it comes organically.
Here's the thing. Apple has bought a lot of companies.
Yes, they have. Absolutely.
All right. But they don't pay $3 billion, $5 billion, $10 billion for big companies. They be buying small companies with good ideas. All right. Yeah, they'll do that.
And prototypically, what you see all the time with Apple's company purchases is they buy something that has the core of something that they can use elsewhere. Like, for instance, one of the prototypical examples, they bought what the hell was the program called that they
SoundJam.
That was like the best MP3 player out there. But they bought it. They took it off the market, they rejiggered it into iTunes, they released iTunes, and then the rest of that is history. They've bought a bunch of chip companies that they've been now using to design their own chips their devices.
Exactly.
They bought some mapping stuff to help out with their mapping issues, and of course they still got issues there, but they bought some stuff there. They're buying individual narrowly tailored things
and
that provide puzzle pieces that they already know they want.
That strategy historically has proven far more successful than this big bang, big splash, overpaying for shit strategy. All right, and the example I will bring to you is HP.
Just a couple more examples. They bought there was a little company that made the embedded OS that became the core of the original iPod.
Workout player. If I remember correctly. Look, you can't keep overpaying for shit like this, all right? Google has accumulated $23 billion of something that's called in accounting goodwill on their books, all right? And goodwill, so you got to understand, is the difference between the value of the assets that you paid and the cash that you paid. So basically, you got to book that in the book something. It's basically you're paying for air. All right, so it's called goodwill. They've booked $23 billion of that. It's a massive amount. All right, okay, it's a staggering amount in such a short amount of time for a company the size of Google. If you keep overpaying for acquisitions like that, at some point when they don't pan out, you got to write it off. All right, okay, you got to take the loss. All right, and it's happened to a lot of companies before. Even Microsoft has had to take massive write-downs because when they were looking for growth strategies, they overpaid for a lot of companies and they wound up writing them off. HP had to take a massive write-down like recently for overpaying for a whole bunch of acquisitions over the last decade. It's just not a good strategy to keep overpaying for acquisitions like that. And that's what I'm saying that Google's doing. They're going out there and they're like a bunch of fucking drunken sailors spending money on shit, all right? And, you know, saying, oh, yeah, Nest's a great idea. Fuck it. We'll pay that. $2 billion? No, fuck it. $3 billion. Fuck it. What the hell? We can afford it. I'm like, that's not a good way to run a business. So, I mean, that's not my entire point. I've just been saying that. You can't keep running a company that way. You know, they did this whole thing with Motorola. They're probably going to have to take that write-off pretty soon on the Motorola stuff.
Mm-hmm. But you think at this point, you think it was clearly the right thing to do to dump Motorola?
Oh my God, yes! Oh yes! I mean, thankfully they recognized it. You know, they did finally recognize that it was just a massive fuck up, and they did it as quickly as they did. You know, and I'm sure that it's going to benefit the whole relationship with their partners. No, but this goes back to the whole thing I've gone and said. Great. All right. So they got rid of that in the middle. So I keep going back. how the fuck is... Okay, everybody keeps saying, oh, they're going to make money on the ads. You know what? Let me tell you something. I mean, they can't keep making... They can make some more money on it, but Jesus Christ, that's just not a long-term strategy. I don't know. I mean, if they're going to keep... You can't keep doing the R&D
for somebody else. Specifically, it's not a long-term growth strategy that'll grow forever. That's something where they can grow a bit, and then at some point you saturate the advertising market.
And then you're done.
Then you can sit there and make a lot of money on it as a mature company, but that's not what the market is expecting from them.
No, that's not, because they're expecting exponential growth from Google, and it's not really happening. So, you know, everybody's expecting some of these things, like somebody said, like in a recent article. Oh yeah, they're just throwing all this shit on the wall, and they're just expecting something to stick. I'm like, really? That's the strategy?
It'll all be the self-driving cars and the Google Glass.
Hmm. I mean, my problem is that Microsoft did the same thing for the last 10, 15 years.
And we'll talk about them in just a second.
We'll talk about them in just a second, and you know, you'll see how that panned out. But, you know, I don't know. I don't like these strategies. It's just my whole thing about it.
Okay, so I think that wraps up Google pretty well. Let's take a break. And we'll be back, and we'll talk about Microsoft's news. Back after this. And we're back.
Back.
Back. So, you know, I think we went out on a limb on our prediction show a few weeks ago and said that Microsoft would have a new CEO by the end of the year. And look, here it is in February, and we're already right.
Yes.
We're geniuses. But I will say, I don't believe this is a name that either one of us mentioned at any point.
And I think I did avoid trying to make a prediction.
We did say internal might be a possibility, I believe.
Yes, I think we did. And, you know, I think it's probably the best decision for them to bring in somebody internal at this point. There's been a lot of people making a lot of hay about... Bill Gates gave up his role as chairman. However, what I understood is he took up a new role as technology advisor. And there was a whole bunch of people talking about that they're saying that... He committed to spending quite a lot more time.
Up to a third of his time.
That's right. Yeah, in this role.
Now, having said that, do you think this is an area where, on the one hand, he's spending more time, but on the flip side, it's an advisor role where he's going to go around to groups and talk to them and stuff, as opposed to a role with authority where he can make decisions?
Well, I got to tell you something. If you think back to the 90s, okay, all right, when Bill was still day-to-day with Microsoft before he turned everything over to Ballmer, that was the decade where he knew he got caught flat-footed behind on the internet, and what Bill did, he fucking went guns blazing, 180-degree angle, and said, you know what, we're going to go in and we're going to take over these markets. All right, we're going to do this, we're going to do this, we're going to do this. And he did, all right? In the 90s, Microsoft turned into a freaking juggernaut. Everybody thought it was unstoppable. Now, when he turned over the reins to Ballmer, Ballmer milked the company for a lot of stuff and didn't launch the Xbox, okay? He had a lot of input into that. But Microsoft didn't really expand into any new markets or, like, was caught ahead of stuff. They were, some people were blaming, like, Bill Gates over the whole Windows Mobile thing. I mean, the whole Windows Mobile thing with the phones was really under Ballmer's watch. Wasn't really under Bill's. How not aggressive or how sucky their phones were forever, and like basically Apple went around them and created something that was like so superior they just knocked them off their stack. Now, I think that I do think that Bill's input could help substantially the new CEO put together a strategy for the future. I do think so.
Do you think the strategy here was, let's get Bill where he can provide some useful advice, but move him out of a role where he would be meddling
managerial authority? Yeah, I think so.
So, and the new guys, by the way, it's Satya Nadella. Did I pronounce that right?
I think so. Yes,
Satya Nadella.
Yeah.
So he'll have a position where Bill will be involved, Bill will be looking at things, Bill will be advising him, but he's going to have the decision-making power without worrying about Bill looking over his shoulder as much.
Right. I understood.
That's why this is architected this way.
Yeah.
And of course, they've got a new chairman in place, too.
Guy from Symantec,
John Thompson. Yep. I hadn't heard of him before.
Yeah, but, he used to be CEO of Symantec a while back. Yeah,
but anyway, do you think? And of course, this guy comes from. He was in charge of Azure. Was that right? That Windows, the Microsoft Cloud offerings. Is that correct, right? Or am I making that up?
I actually have no idea. I don't know what the hell this guy did before. I didn't look it up.
I'll have to look that up. Yeah, but I believe he comes from the sort of cloud portion of the company.
A lot of the cloud offerings that Microsoft has launched have been successful. I gotta be honest with you. There's been quite a lot of companies that I've been, in my work, been bumping into that have migrated to Exchange hosted by Microsoft. They don't host their own Exchange service anymore. And other services such as that. I think that their enterprise application software, Microsoft has shown that they want to migrate it to a pay-per-use model, a hosted model. They've moved a lot of that. I think that most people, I don't care what the hell they say about Google Docs, this, the whatever, Open Office, whatever the fuck it is. Listen, most people to use an application, they want to use Microsoft Office.
It's the familiar thing. It's what everybody knows. It's what everybody's done. And I can definitely see the convenience of, hey, you don't have to run your whole installation. You just use the cloud offering.
Right.
But it's still the stuff
They're not. They're
fully
not doing
compatible,
like Blockbuster.
And it's not an issue.
Right. I'm saying that they're not doing the Blockbuster where, like, 15 years ago, Blockbuster knew they should have had a fucking online offering, but they didn't do it, so they let Netflix go and kill them. Okay? They're doing it now. They're being proactive. They're being out there. So it's their offering, and they're moving to it. Let's face it. We're still using all of these apps. It doesn't fucking matter whether it's a cloud, here, whatever. You need a spreadsheet. You need a word processor. You want a collaboration tool. You want a calendar tool. You want all this shit. You know, if they're migrating it to where the people are working and how they're working, and they're doing that, and they're sitting on their ass, they're not doing like Lotus 1-2-3 did when they didn't port their fucking apps to WYSIWYG, and they left it running on DOS. If you're being proactive in that, you're not going to get killed, all right? Because people like this product. And, if they, Microsoft has a cloud, well, fuck, why am I going to use this shit?
Well, let's be clear. It's a love-hate relationship. In many cases,
I think the hatred has died down.
I think that probably is less than it was at various points in the past. But it's also one of these things where, your individual users may swear at Excel when they use it, but it's a known quantity. Everybody knows it. The IT folks know it. The people using it, everybody knows what it is.
I
everybody
live
knows
on
what
Excel,
it's capable
man.
Of. You know,
I mean, it's like my life is run on Excel. I mean, I can't fucking do without that damn thing. Forget Word. Word, I'll use it occasionally. PowerPoint, I use, yeah. And even, at my work, I don't even use Outlook. I use Lotus Notes. Anyway, but that's another story. But anyway, the reality is that Excel, dude, I mean, I've got it open on my computer right now. I mean, I live on this fucking app. I live and breathe this damn thing. It's just, I can't imagine my life without this fucking thing.
I do Excel every week as well, almost every day, and
it is the most
Outlook thing is that the default email, and you know, it's impossible to be in a major U.S. company without interacting with Office. Now I've heard of a few companies that are going off and doing other things using Gmail and other things like that.
Yeah,
but it's still like. But the vast majority are still Microsoft shops.
And they like this shit. I mean, you tell people, oh, yeah, we're going to migrate to this crap. They're going to look at you. Are you fucking nuts?
Now, of course, one of the arguments is, you know, Microsoft may have all this enterprise stuff, but they've been so thoroughly losing the consumer market that eventually that's going to start rubbing off on enterprise. But they've got some runway left. They got a lot of runway.
I mean, you know, it's not like, you know, they have quite a broad product offering, okay, in a lot of places in the stack for the enterprise. They've got a lot of runway, and even like, you know what? Listen, let me put it to you this way: Microsoft reported very good earnings last quarter, okay, showing that whatever the heck concerns that most people had basically didn't materialize. So, you know, I think that Microsoft, do they have issues? Do they have concerns strategically where they go? Yes, but what company doesn't? Okay, all right. I don't think that they are near a point where they're at close to a crisis stage or anything like that. I just don't think that is there.
Do you think there is an issue where, you know, they've got, you know, one of the things that we talked about before last year when we were talking about what the new Microsoft CEO has to do is, you know, shake out a lot of the cruft at Microsoft. And, you know, there's some things that are very healthy and have a lot of potential. There are other things that are just flat out failures. And there are other things that are just wastes of effort.
Agreed.
Do you see, like, in the first year, do you see, like, major restructurings, jettisoning whole parts of the company, layoffs,
I think so. I do think so. I think that the new CEO needs to put a razor focus on where the company needs to be in the future. And I think that whoever the new CEO is needs to.
Well, we know who it is now.
Well, yeah. I mean, the new CEO, like right now, has got a name. He has to focus on that. I do agree, and I think that that will mean making substantial changes in the business in order to make that happen. Yeah, I do think so. I'll tell you. Let me give you a stat so you get an idea. Microsoft's revenues in 2009, $57 billion. 2013, $77 billion. All right. Basically, I mean, that's, by the way, about the revenue for Google. All right. Pre-tax income growth. 2009, $19.8 billion. 2013, $27 billion. All right. That, I mean, you know, so they grew their income in the last 5 years by, what the heck, $8 billion. So that's like, what, 40%? Microsoft is not a company that is in crisis, okay, like right now. I mean, they just earned $21 billion in income last year. I mean, by the way, that's about three times what Google earned, all right? They're not a company that is close to the situation. However, they do, I think that being Microsoft has always been, which is a very paranoid company about their situation, and knowing that they have missed certain key markets, okay, all right, of growth that have happened over the last couple of years. The PC market's declining. They missed out on mobile. They got a couple of issues. They know that they've got to do something to not get caught in a situation where they wound up being out of the game. And they know it, and they got to do something. And I think that the new CEO is being basically tasked in order to do that. And I think the reason why they pick somebody with a technology background is because what they need is not operational. They need somebody with a strategic vision of technology, where the hell it's going to go. And that's what they really need.
So, his first day was Tuesday, February 4th. How long do you think it'll be till we start seeing big changes?
Since he's an internal guy?
Yeah.
I'll say 90 days.
Okay.
He's going to go through a review. He's going to meet with all the top guys. He's going to probably hunker down and like doing a lot of reviews. I'll say 90 days at least. 90 days to it.
So May or June. Days. May or June.
Yeah. It won't be earlier than that, I don't think.
Okay. And by the way, his history, he's been executive vice president of the Cloud and Enterprise Group, corporate vice president of the Business Solutions and Search Advertising Group, vice president of the Microsoft Business Division, senior vice president of research and development for online services, president of server and tools. That's sort of his history here. He's all in the online services, cloud space, with a smattering of other things as well.
Hey, you know what? If Microsoft decides to focus significantly mostly on business and fuck the other stuff, that's not a crazy decision. Okay, all right. They say Xboxes, for example, are consumer offering, and we're gonna go focus on the enterprise. That's not a crazy thing.
Yeah.
I mean,
could you see them like explicitly jettisoning consumer and saying it's just not something we're going to, we'll still offer it.
Maybe not jettisoning it, but maybe de-emphasizing it. I could see them explicitly doing that where they're not explicitly going after it. Yeah.
No more Windows Me's.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Of course, that was a long time ago too.
But. Yeah. But I understand what you're saying. I mean, yeah. Microsoft Bob.
That's even longer ago. you could see them perhaps doing stuff like that and saying, you know, Windows is a business tool. We're going to stop fucking around with trying to create, you know, music and pictures apps and stuff like that
in Windows. We're going to focus that on a business tool. We're going to create other consumer tools, but it's not going to be just, you know, fucking like trying to meld Windows into a consumer tool and a business tool. Fuck it. We're going to focus on the business tool. We're going to create other consumer stuff.
And you know, you can let third parties do that stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, that was their model for the longest time anyway. The only reason they started doing the, hey, let's try to make this unified thing was because they saw it was working for Apple. But their strategy for a long time was we build the operating system. Yeah, and you've got this whole ecosystem of apps. We don't have to worry about that. Those, you know, you want a photo management app? Somebody will make that. It doesn't have to be Microsoft.
Right. But of course, when Apple started building in everything into the fucking OS, then it's kind of like caused problems.
Indeed. yes. Anything else to say on Microsoft, or should we take another break and move on?
Let's take another break.
Okay. Here comes the break.
Breaky.
Ready for the test, Dracula?
I'm ready, Frankenstein. Then, let us begin.
Creepy Classic celebrates the classic horror and science fiction films from the silent era through the 1960s, and retro TV horror from the 1950s to the 1970s. Visit creepyclassics.com for all your classic video needs. And when you buy something, tell Ron that the curmudgeons say hello.
Okay, here we are. So next up, hey, we're talking about the debt limit again, and guess what? It's only a few weeks away, and what, you know, and...
Oh, God, nothing's going to happen. Jesus Christ.
And so one of the things here is, like, I've heard quotes of, like, not directly, but from people who've been talking to Republican leadership along the lines of, we know we want to, like, try to get something out of this before we give it up, but, you know, we're not even sure quite what to ask for yet. We can't really agree on that.
Really? I mean, what the hell? This is, like, the same fucking story every time with these assholes. They don't even know what the hell they're looking for. I mean, that's the irritating part. If you had something that you're looking for, then I'd be okay, but...
Because, of course, some people are, like, still talking about doing something with rolling back parts of Obamacare. Other people are talking about they want certain budget concessions. There are other people talking about this or that or whatever, you know. But there doesn't seem to be a unified message. And, of course, the Democrats are going exactly like you just said. We've heard this story before. We know there is a majority in the House and the Senate to pass an increase here, and what's going to happen is they're going to make noise, and then Bonnier's going to say, okay, let's have all the Democrats plus a few Republicans, and we'll get this done, and maybe you'll have to have the Democrats throw out sort of a fig leaf that gives some of those Republicans cover, but doesn't really mean anything, and no one's really concerned about.
Right. That's what kind of it sounds like. I'm just irritated by the whole thing. I mean, every fucking time now, it's the same shit.
And the only question, like, you know, last time around, we sort of, you know, they resolved this all before it got really close to the edge, right? Or am I confusing this with the stupid budget thing? There's so many.
No, they did. Remember that they went over the cliff on the budget, right? So they shut down the government. But the debt limit, the deal got done before the debt limit.
Done before the deadline, but it was still only a few days away, right? It wasn't
still they didn't fucking, like, you know, they still bent over and did it anyway.
See, you know, the thing is with this game they keep playing, you know, there's always the chance that they'll just accidentally fuck it up. You know, and
but they did that. Remember, we went over like that other time at the end of the year, the whole fiscal cliff bullshit that we still fucking.
Well, that we not only went over, we stayed over for most of the year. But, like, you know, what everybody says is, like, going over the debt limit would be much more consequential than that. Of course, you know, nobody believes this stuff anymore either, which is part of the danger, you know, because it's like you've been through this so many times. On the one hand, you're like, the Republicans will call it off before they get to the edge. The Republicans will call it off for the edge. And meanwhile, the Republicans are like, you know, every other time they've said that, you know, this will be complete economic destruction if we went over. And look, we went over this other thing and it was fine. So what's the big deal? And so one of these days, somebody's going to miscalculate. We're going to go over and we'll actually have something that has consequences. Just not because anybody intends it, but because everybody just sort of fucks up and miscalculates. And maybe they even intend to pull it out at the last moment, but accidentally something comes up and they're 24 hours too late.
I don't think anything should happen.
I think you're probably right. Obviously, when we talked about this on our prediction show, we said, you know, there's not going to be a lot of drama here. When we talked this on our prediction show, we actually said we're not even going to get close. They'll just resolve it before.
They're going to resolve it before. I don't think we're going to even get close.
Well, and so the question is, what do we mean by that? Are they going to be staying up at 11 o'clock the day before a deadline?
I'm going to say that a couple of days.
Or are they going to take care of this, like, in the next couple days for a deadline that's still a couple weeks out?
I'm going to say that at least a week before it's going to get done.
A week before?
Yeah.
You know, I am once again losing faith in this process. I will say that it will get done. We will not go over the edge, but it's going to be within the last 24 to 48 hours.
Well,
before the deadline.
You fucking idiots.
and you know, the thing is, you know, this is so... We've said this before. There's a legitimate argument over what government should be spending money on, what tax policy is, how much money we should take in, how much money we should spend. The time that you deal with that is when you pass tax bills and when you pass appropriation bills. This debt limit nonsense is bullshit because it's double defining a problem.
But that's exactly my point. They fucking approved the goddamn budget to fucking spend the money already, you stupid assholes, for the next 2 years. And now you're ticking around paying it? I mean, come on! Stupid idiots.
Time for the super coin again.
Super coin, baby.
Well, you know, and one of the things that came out It actually came out a couple months ago, but it just got some additional press this last week because I believe Paul Krugman referenced it. It did come out that the White House did take the Supercoin idea seriously enough that they assigned some of their lawyers to evaluate it as an option. Now, they did, no word on how that evaluation went and what they decided, but they took it seriously enough as an option that they assigned a team of lawyers specifically to look into what it would take, would it be viable, what would be the mechanism if they indeed wanted to do it, all of that kind of stuff. So, look, the bottom line is, if push ever came to shove, in last year's version of this, there have been three or four different options that have come out that basically allow ways the executive could do things to enable the government to continue to pay its bills, even if we hit the debt limit and we were not allowed to issue any more debt whatsoever. Basically, they all, in one way or another, involve paying for things in inflationary ways. Through one of various mechanisms, creating money and paying things with the money you created instead of creating debt. So there are ways to do it. There are ways to do it. You know, and of course we can also go the default route where we just say, you know, anybody the government owes money for, you know, the revenues allow us 60 cents on a dollar for what we're due to spend. We're just going to pay 60 cents on a dollar on every single thing we owe. Of course, that's the thing that people are like, that would have a significant economic impact.
That would be, you would think. Well.
And of course, you know, and the thing is, you know, people say also, well, you know, there's all kinds of stuff that could be cut and we don't have to spend it at all. But the reality is, as much as, you know, Obama and presidents before him have flouted this, they actually are legally bound to spend this money by the laws the Congress has passed. So it's not right. Like the president can just decide, you know, I don't need a Department of Education.
The money got approved. And then, of course, there's the full faith and credit clause, right? Okay, so the reality is that since he got approved to spend the money, and there's a full faith and credit clause, the fact that, I mean, you could make a valid
argument. This is the 14th Amendment argument that says, right, if we hit the debt limit, the president is nevertheless bound.
Correct.
Because the thing is, at that point, he's in a catch-22, because no matter what he does, he has to violate one law or another.
Exactly.
He just has to pick which law to violate.
That's right.
And which law is the president going to violate? The president is going to violate the debt limit law, not the law that says the government has to pay its bonds.
That's correct.
And not the law that says that the government is going to pay Social Security or pay for defense or pay for anything else the government does on an ongoing basis. If the president ever gets put in that choice of he's violating the debt limit.
Because, I mean, they're just incongruous. That's why this whole thing, the debt limit is a fucking, I keep saying it's a fucking sham.
And then of course you have, well, okay, then you can impeach him. Have fun.
Sure. Have fun with that.
Because, you know, even if the House impeached him, the Senate would acquit him. We're done. You know, it would distract everything for 6-9 months, however long it takes for that process to go through. But, you know, it wouldn't, in the end, result in anything. And the courts wouldn't intervene because the courts, historically, whenever there have been disputes like this, have said, you know, Congress, President, this is between you guys.
We're out of this. You figure it out. And the reality is the Congress, I mean, it's like I said, you pass conflicting... You have conflicting things that you're sending to the executive to do, and so you made them basically pick which law to break. It's fucking retarded. No.
Okay. We'll take another break. We'll come back and talk about government by lottery. Back after this.
You're in the Valley, AM 1620 and LigonierRadio.com. This is where you'll find your favorite songs. Everybody's doing a brand new dance now. Come on, baby.
Let's do the twist. Well, they got a new dance and it goes like this.
I hit the radio dial and tuned it up all the way.
I got a dance.
Classic music for a classic American town, AM 1620, and in stereo at LigonierRadio.com, The Valley.
Okay, here we are. So just to give the reference, the article that prompted me to talk about this week particularly was something published on Aeon Magazine, A-E-O-N. It's aeon.co. It's an article by Alexander Guerrero, G-U-E-R-R-E-R-O, called The Latocracy. And basically, he brings up an idea that, as I said, I've mentioned a number of times before, and in his article, which is worth reading, by the way, it's a very good article, it's been done, this has actually been done and implemented in various countries on small scales, back through the ancient Greeks and everywhere in between, where certain things, instead of electing officials, they basically pick them randomly. And here's the bottom line argument of this. The bottom line is the notion that the whole idea of elections is flawed in a number of ways. Now, it's a great idea that everybody... So, the original idea, straight-up democracy, is let the people decide. But direct democracy doesn't scale very well. You can't have everybody voting on everything. I mean, technologically, at this point, you probably actually could. You could build a system where everybody could vote on everything. For every law that comes up in Congress, you just have a general election, have people vote online. You could do that. But the thing is, there's a fundamental limitation that, you know, the vast majority of people don't have the time or inclination to keep up with things in detail. Like, maybe you and I, Yvonne, would want to do this. Maybe some of our listeners would want to. But the vast majority of people don't want to deal with this. So the idea of representative democracy is that you elect people to represent you, and then they think about all that stuff. But what have we actually seen in real life? The idea of this, the original idea of representative democracy is in your community, everybody sort of elects the wise people from their community to run things for them. And you're not necessarily picking, you know, this guy agrees with me on issue X, Y, or Z. You're thinking, you know, Bob's a really smart guy. Let him figure this out. But that's not what happens. We all know that's not what happens. Right now, we have a system where in order to even run for election, you have to have all kinds of money behind you. You have to raise money. You've got to, it's all, and you've got a populace who, the large grouping of people out there aren't incredibly well informed about what's going on. You put ads in front of them. You get messages across. You sort of, it's about who can trick the most people into voting for them, really. You know, and yes, there's a core about policy in there, of course, and you have sort of basic fundamental differences about approach to government that apply, that people influence their votes. But, you know, and then once people get in office, because they're worrying about running for re-election, they're also very tied up in, oh, I got
all right, all right. So what's the solution again? How are you solving the problem?
So basically the idea is, instead of having all these people who are running for office, who first of all are people who desire power and who can raise this money and all this other stuff, you say you want a good representation of the public at large. The best way to get that is not to elect, because the people we elect are not a good representation of the public at large at all. You pick them randomly. Have a lottery of all voting age people in a jurisdiction and say, you know, let's say we're looking for a congressperson. You look at the congressional district, you pick somebody at random out of the congressional district and say, boom, you're the congressman. And there are a number of variants. This particular guy...
So you wouldn't disqualify anybody, say, maybe because they're a criminal assailant, a psychotic, any of those things.
If 5% of the population is in prison, then shouldn't 5% of Congress be prisoners? Now, there are a number of different variants of this. The way that this guy particularly did it, he wouldn't just replace Congress. He was looking at having specific topic-specific Congresses. So, what we have the sort of committees in Congress right now, each one would be their own little Congress that got random people to it. He had a whole thing with 3-year terms that rotate every other year. He was getting very elaborate in terms of the mechanisms. I say you could do it with our existing system. You could certainly have certain exclusions that say, if you're in prison, you're not eligible. If you're a child, you're not eligible. He suggested that it would not be mandatory to serve. Like, you could decline to serve and they'd have to pick somebody else. But he suggested that they put in a really high financial incentives. Like, if you do this, you get, a very, very competitive salary for those 3 years that you're in it. There are a number of, and with the idea that, you would be able to monitor these people fairly closely to make sure they're not getting bought off or anything while they're in office. There are a number of downsides to this, obviously. It is sort of potluck. You could get crazies. You could get people who are incredibly corrupt and are very sneaky about selling their votes, but still sell their votes. I think a far more likely thing is, frankly, if you just pick people at random, you're much more likely to get people who don't know very much about what's going on, and they will be very much able to be influenced by even if you don't put money into the equation, by lobbyists who come in and make their case and say, well, you have to do it our way because this is the way that makes sense, and we know what we're talking about. You have no idea what you're talking about, do you? There are a lot of things that are downsides here, but I think fundamentally, there's a core to this that's worthy of exploration. I wouldn't try it first on a national level, but I could see a few small towns trying this, to get city council people or school board members or something this way, and see how it works out.
This is not that crazy, I guess, but
geez. Yeah, because look, the thing is, you're gonna get a group that's much more representative of the public at large. You're gonna get people that are a lot less likely to have been pre-influenced by donors and people who are contributing to their campaigns and people who basically who they owe in one way or another. I you take this whole industry around the election and you just blow it up. I mean, the suggestion I made last election cycle was you select the Electoral College this way. Forget having an election in the state. Pick your electors by lottery and then have them vote for whoever they want.
Oh, yeah, that would be something.
So we have 538 people picked at random, and let them vote for whoever they feel like. Don't forget this, year plus long election cycle. Pick these guys a month before the election and put them in a room. Maybe even let the candidates individually lobby these 538 people and then let them pick.
I don't know. I don't know if that's really the solution to our democracy. That's all I'm saying.
Well, you can't really call it a democracy anymore, but I think in many ways it would actually be more representative than the democracy we actually have.
It's kind of crazy.
And as long as you have fairly random, fairly large numbers, you wouldn't want to select the president simply by picking at random one of the 400 million people in the United States.
You think?
But if you pick at random 538 people and then let them vote on who becomes the president, you probably have a decent result out of that.
I would say that it probably wouldn't be the craziest result. I'm not gonna argue that point, but I don't know if the result is gonna be that much different.
It might not, but I think the whole dynamic of it would be so different, and I think in a number of ways it would actually be positive. Now, obviously, again, like, you know, I'm not talking real world here. Nobody's going to change the Electoral College to vote by a lottery for the 2016 election cycle.
You think?
Although, you know, if you carefully took over a small state like Rhode Island or something, you might be able to get them to go for it.
Yeah.
But seriously, though, I think this is the kind of idea that's worth trying at a small scale. Like a small town picking their town council and school board and stuff like this that way. I think, you know, it's worth trying at a small scale, and if it works okay on the small scale, then you can expand out from there.
Yeah.
You sound skeptical, Yvonne.
Yeah, it's just a little bit.
You know, I of course will not be able to pull a reference from this, but, you know, we were talking business earlier. I remember seeing a reference to some sort of study that was done amongst medium-sized businesses that showed that you could get results that were at least equally as good and possibly better if promotions were selected at random rather than by some sort of evaluation and merit-based system.
So promotions at work be selected at just absolute random.
Yes.
Well, I got to be honest with you. I'm not going to... The reality is, seeing how most managers are, how bad they are, it probably would be no different. I'm not going to disagree with that.
Part of the argument behind all of these kinds of things is the people who are motivated by accumulating power, whether it be in the workplace or in politics, are the last people you actually want to have in power.
I don't know about that. I think the bigger problem is that you get a lot of people making decisions about promotions and to bring people up that sometimes either they don't pay attention too much to the process,
or they're looking for the wrong things.
It's just the people they like, or it's just the people they feel less threatened by. There's just so many reasons that have nothing to do.
Or it's people that are like them, where actually you get the best success by promoting a variety of people, including people who are diametrically opposite.
Exactly. Right. It's just so many of those factors. It's like, I got to tell you that from my perspective, my feeling is that most people just don't take the process seriously enough to actually analyze what is actually best for the organization. And
to bring this back to election, it's the same kind of thing. The people who are best at winning elections are not necessarily the same people who are best at governing.
Agreed.
And that's one of the fundamental things that ideas like this try to work against, which is, you know, the whole skill set that you need in order to get elected is not about sort of governing and policy making. It's about raising money and tricking people and making people like you, and tricking is a disparaging word. Making people like you, making people
like convincing
people
that, yeah,
to come your way, you know, and those are important skills in certain situations, but it's not necessarily the same set of skills that let you pick what's the wisest thing for the city or the country or the city or the state or the country to do next.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Well, so you're not convinced, though?
I'm just not convinced it's going to be that much different or better. That's all.
See, now, of course, I was going to say, now, if you put me in charge of everything, I would implement a system like this. But, of course, that's bullshit. If you put me in charge of everything, I'd be in charge of everything, goddammit. And I'm not about to let that go.
We're running a fucking dictatorship, and we're done. We're out.
That's right. It's all me, man. I you know, I'll tell everybody what to do. I am, of course, completely sarcastic there.
Are you kidding me? Bullshit. If you got put in charge, you'd be fucking running the show the way that you fucking want, period. That's it. Done. End of story.
You are, to a large degree, correct, but there's certain kinds of decisions
you would take some consideration. But I would delegate those. People, I would choose blah, you to blah, delegate blah. Those. Yeah. You'll have me, I don't know, at some point he'll say, oh gosh, let Ivan decide on this. Yeah, it's probably best, or something. Yeah, whatever.
And then I'll let you decide as long as I like your decisions, and if I don't like your decisions, then I'll fire your ass.
Exactly.
Or, if I'm king, chop your head off.
Or something. There you go.
Whatever seems most convenient at the time.
Accuse me of treason or something like that very quickly.
That's right. Anyway, I still like the idea of... I like the idea of randomization in all aspects of life. I use it to decide, what I'm going to listen to in the car on the way to work every day. I roll dice, literally, to decide if I'm going to listen to music or podcasts or a radio station or whatever. And so I encourage the expansion of that kind of thing to all aspects of life.
You know what? I've actually... have a pretty good damn track record of hiring pretty good people. Okay, all right. So, you know what? No.
No?
No.
No.
All right? No. All right? And if I went by random and, picked people, I know that I would have picked a lot of shit. So, no. All right? That's just... But that's just me. There was a couple of people. There was one of my guys who was at the office making fun of this because I keep hiring people who become successful. And the guy said, maybe all the managers just outsource the hiring to you because nobody else seems to know what the fuck they're doing.
Well, there you go, Yvonne. You're special.
Well, in that regard, about probably picking people, maybe. But I don't know in general, but I just,
And I mean, we could apply this to other areas, like to decide which countries to bomb.
I'd rather defer on that decision. I don't want to be bombing any countries. I gotta be honest.
We need to use up these drones. Roll the dice. Oh, hey, look, it's Switzerland this week.
Oh, gosh. There you go. That would be just wonderful, wouldn't it? It's all fun. The Swiss are like, what the fuck? Oh, yeah, your number came up this week. Congratulations.
That's all it takes. At least then it's fair.
Oh, well, there you go. As long as it was a fair process.
Exactly. Okay, thanks, everybody. I think that's a show.
Yeah.
Should I roll some dice to see if we're done?
I got a dice over here that's a decision making dice. Here we go. It's got a few different options. Let me roll it.
I've got dice apps on my phone. I've got physical dice. I've got the whole.
My dice decided that we should recline.
We should recline.
Yes.
I can lean back in this chair.
All right. There you go. Of course, if I lean back too much, I'll fall. I'm leaning back on my chair too. All right. There you go.
Okay. We're all leaning back. We're kicking back. And with that, thanks everybody for joining us. You know the deals. Contact us, give us feedback, blah, blah, blah.
Tweet,
tell your friends.
Tweet us.
Yeah, all that. And we'll talk to you next week. Have a good... There's no holidays or anything this week or anything.
Not really,
just have a good week. And we'll talk to you next time. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.